really important issue I really want more people to know about.
Well, we're happy you're here. And, of course, you are absolutely right. It is an important issue. And, unfortunately, not that many people know about it. So let's talk about it. So this is germane to Louisiana because, as I understand, Louisiana ranks second only to Texas in the number of detainees that are currently being held here. This will probably come as a surprise to Louisianans, but how many facilities to hold immigrants are there in Louisiana, and about how many people are we holding currently?
There's 11 facilities, and that's really been a huge increase in the last 4 years. When I first got interested in this issue, there was only one, or maybe two, and now we have 11. Our number of people detained is not published anywhere specifically, but we believe that it's been as high as 8,000 people. That's what ICE has said in October of 2019. Of course, under COVID, things have changed a bit and the population has gone down. Right now, we think there are approximately 5,000 people in immigration detention spread out over all of these detention centers. But I don't have an exact number right now.
Are these mostly men that are being held? Are there men and women or children? Or who? What's the population?
Well, the population is mostly men. We do have one detention center that is all female, as far as I know, and that's the one at Bazille. It's called South Louisiana ICE Processing Center, and it's at Bazille. And I think right now, I'm not sure how many people. Well, the average daily population in 2020 was 430 females. There are also female people being detained at Gina, LaSalle, and maybe a few other places.
Interesting. Just to go over some of the names which you provided to me of the places where we're keeping people: Wynn, Jackson, Richwood, River, Gina, LaSalle, Catahoula, Pine Prairie, Bazille, Allen Parish, Alexandria, perhaps. So we've spread these people around. Now, they're all kind of out in rural areas, right? That's where these facilities are?
Yeah, that's right. And it's actually true kind of nationwide, is that that's where prisons are located. And these facilities are essentially prisons. And where ICE has chosen to put people is pretty far away from urban centers. And that makes the people there very isolated and vulnerable.
Yeah. Now, when you say ICE, ICE is...
Oh, yes. I'm sorry. ICE is Immigration and Customs Enforcement. And it is, these are the folks that are in charge of immigrant detention for the most part. Children and families may come under a different group, but these are all within the Department of Homeland Security.
Okay. Well, usually when we think about ICE and immigration, I guess I think about workers coming across the border to work here illegally, or I suppose we have issues of people selling drugs or having nefarious purpose. Is that is that who's ending up in these immigrant detainee facilities?
No, those are really, I think, political talking points. Most of the people coming across the border right now are seeking asylum from violence and persecution in their homelands. And certainly that's the overwhelming number of the people that I've met when I've gone to detention facilities in Louisiana. I did meet a couple of people who were picked up from the interior, and one was picked up in one of those raids on the chicken processing plant in Mississippi. She had U.S. citizen children. She had been here for 10 years working as a chicken processor. Another woman that I met was from New Orleans, and she'd been here for 4 years working as a cleaning person in a hotel and had a U.S. citizen husband. So these aren't lawbreakers or anyone who's trying to do something nefarious. These are people. Most of the people are not people that were picked up from the interior. Most of the people at detention facilities here are people who have come here specifically to seek asylum in the United States, which they're entitled to by law.
Well, that was one of the questions that I had, which was, so ICE will do these sweeps of, say, poultry plants or of workplaces, and they round up people. And then they have those people, but then they also have people that are actually trying to come in through the border, you know, particularly the border with Texas and Mexico or Arizona and Mexico and so on. So ICE is mixing these people, these groups up at various spots. Is that what you're telling me?
Yes, that's true. Now, there are people who are also encountered through law enforcement inside the country. There's just very few of those people that I have met in these facilities. And most of these are people who have served out their sentences and are deportable because they have a criminal conviction. The thing that a lot of people don't realize is that most of the people in immigration detention have no criminal past at all, you know, no criminal history at all. And I'm talking about most of the people who do have criminal histories in immigration detention are folks that have something like traffic offenses, or they've been prosecuted for coming to the United States illegally. These are not crimes that are going to affect anyone. You know, they're not being held because they're, you know, to punish them for committing a crime, or even because there's some danger that they pose to the public. And most of these folks, I mean, have already paid their fine. I mean, these are such minor offenses that usually they haven't even had to do any jail time in the United States.
What's the overall policy with regard to detained immigrants? You know, so people show up at the border and they are trying to get either apprehended, trying to get across, or or they come up to the border and they ask for asylum. What's the policy at that point, and how does it work?
Well, it works differently depending on whether they have already crossed the border when they ask for asylum, or whether they present themselves at a port of entry. At a port of entry, they present themselves and they're given if they ask for asylum, they're given what's called a credible fear interview, where they're screened to find out if they are claiming, whether they have sort of a colorable claim of asylum or various other forms of relief from deportation, which I'll just put in there asylum, but there are various ways in which a person can legally be allowed to stay in the U.S. If they have a credible fear, they are required to be detained, but ICE can parole them. And until recently, that was the normal process. 75% of the people who came through the New Orleans field office, which governs not only Louisiana but also Mississippi, they, up until 2017, they were paroled, which means they're allowed to continue to live in the United States and live on the outside with their families, with their communities, or with sponsors until their immigration case is processed. And that was the normal method. Since in the last 4 years, that has dwindled to almost nothing, and there's had to be litigation to try to get ICE to comply with its own policies regarding parole. The other method is coming in if they're apprehended, or if many people just turn themselves in to the nearest border patrol officer when they cross the border because they do want asylum. And in that case, they can be bonded out by an immigration judge if they pass their credible fear interview. And many people are, though that has really slowed down in the last 4 years, causing a huge increase in the number of people being held in detention centers.
Well, one of the things, is there a judge at these credible fear interviews, and is there a standard of judging when somebody has a fear? How does that work?
Well, there are standards, but they aren't judges. These are trained people that work within the Border Patrol.
These are
people that have a great deal of experience with people coming across the border, mm-hmm. and they're employed by the Department of Homeland Security.
So let's say that I'm a woman who's being abused by my husband in Mexico, and her family is set out to get me, and I'm fleeing that, and I try to flee across the border. I come in and I claim asylum. Is that a grounds to claim asylum in the United States?
Well, the grounds for asylum are spelled out in the statute, and they are, and in fact, they come from international law, which says that people who have a well-founded fear of persecution, let me find where I wrote it down, they're unwilling or unable to return to their home country, and they can't obtain protection in that country due to past persecution or a well-founded fear of being persecuted in the future on account of race, religion, nationality, membership in a particular social group, or political opinion. So that is in the UN Convention on Refugees, and it was made part of United States law by United States Congress in 1968, I believe. So those are the grounds for asylum. And, you know, a particular social group, that's the one where a person, there have been a great many cases where women who have been persecuted because they're female in a society that does not protect women from violence by their husbands have sought asylum here. And that's one of the changes that's been made under the current administration, where immigration judges had accepted that as a grounds for asylum. And the attorney general by fiat said, no, that's not going to be a grounds for asylum anymore. It would depend on the particular. Yeah, it was Sessions. Mm-hmm. And Jeff Sessions, who was attorney general before William Barr, made that decision. And, you know, of course it's been challenged, and of course we have hopes that it will be reversed. But that's just one very restrictive interpretation of asylum law that's been applied. Another is about gang violence. The key here is that your government cannot or will not protect you. And there are many cases, and it's well known, that in many countries, the police and the military participate with the gangs in extorting and persecuting the population. And people are desperate. They have to get out, and they can be found at any part of the country if they're refusing to pay extortion or whatever it is that the gangs are trying to get them to do. And that's been cut back tremendously under the current administration.
One thing I'm curious about, as I understand it, you say that in 2017 we changed how we were doing parole for detainees. Is that correct?
Well, parole will be done by ICE as an administrative matter. And ICE has different field offices all over the country. One is in New Orleans, and it governs people who are detained in Louisiana. And it just depends where in the country you end up. But if you end up in Louisiana or Mississippi, you are in bad shape, because the particular ICE office there has gone from paroling 75% of the folks that ask for it to virtually zero.
Now, virtually zero means that then, of course, we hang on to those people and keep them in detention centers. By the way, if you just tuned in, we are talking to lawyer Nell Hahn, who has been volunteering with immigrant custody issues and has a long career in public advocacy, civil rights law, and so on. So continuing our conversation, what's the motive for not paroling these detainees? Is there a question of they're not going to show for their hearings, or are they going to escape into the interior of the country somehow and disappear and we'll never see them again? What's the rationale there?
Well, I think that's generally the rationale, and it's really mistaken. I don't know if that's the motive, but that's the rationale. The rationale is that if we allow people to be paroled, that they will disappear and they will live illegally in the country, and they won't show up for their immigration appointments, and they won't show up for their court hearings, and they'll just be gone. And actually, detention is not necessary to make people show up for their immigration court appointments or for deportation. There have been pilot programs tried by ICE itself and by the Department of Homeland Security itself, and by contracting with nonprofit groups that set up community supervision for people on parole or on bond. And those programs have been extremely successful at a tiny fraction of the cost of immigration detention. I mean, in the last couple of years, like 400 to 500,000 people have gone through the immigration detention facilities per year, with 55,000 people per day being the number that ICE has striven to fulfill. And these people cost an average in the country of $133 a day to hold just an individual in immigration detention. If it's in family detention, which is another horror story, it goes up to like $300 a day. Whereas these alternative programs, which, as I said, are highly successful, can do it on something like $4 to $7 a day. I mean, the difference in cost is amazing. We're spending $3 billion a year detaining immigrants, and it's an unnecessary cost. And I honestly believe that that is part of the motivation for keeping people in detention. It's very profitable for the people who are able to profit off of it.
So let's stop here just a little bit. So now your claim is that, just to summarize, your claim is that detainees, people who are detained by ICE, are not in fact at risk of not showing up for the court hearings or go on. And I assume, I've seen some data that suggests somewhere around 95 to 97% of those people actually do show up for their hearings. But you're saying that it costs a lot to keep these people on a daily basis in detention, $133. And in fact, it costs very little to give them parole, which is and then because that essentially puts them more or less out on their own recognizance in their community. So you're suggesting that there's a profit motive in here. Who's making money on this, and why are we spending so much money?
Well, let me back up a minute and just say that when you give someone parole or an immigration judge's grant bond, they're not just out on their own. They have supervision. There are programs where they're electronically monitored by wearing an ankle bracelet, and those I'm not particularly in favor of because I think it's not necessary and it's a real intrusion on a person's liberty and draconian. Whereas community supervision, where people have case managers and are given, just told when their hearing is, maybe given some help finding out how to get there. There's various kinds of support that folks need in order to live in the community, but it's a whole lot cheaper than locking them up. So I don't want to say that people would be simply let out with no supervision, because that's not the case. But the vast majority of people who are held in immigration detention are held in private prisons. These are privately operated, at least. They may be owned by a public agency, but they are operated by private companies. And there are three giant companies that do this nationally, and they get a tremendous amount of money, and they spend a tremendous amount of money lobbying politicians to increase detention. And these are Corrections Corporation of America, which is currently called Core Civic, and something called the GEO Group, which was Wackenhut. And then we have a homegrown, very large player in this area called LaSalle Corporation that operates a lot of the detention facilities in Louisiana.
And recently I read a book by a guard at one of those corporations, LaSalle Corrections, so right here in Louisiana. So when private prisons they're housing detainees. Now, detainees are not really criminals specifically, although they're in some cases perhaps can be accused at least of violating immigration. But it's not a crime to seek asylum, is it?
Not at all. In fact, it's a human right.
Yeah, so they're seeking
asylum. Enshrined in our law, yeah.
And what we do is we house them. So we're currently taking these people who are seeking asylum, and we're housing them, and we're putting them in prison, essentially, or detention facilities, and we're paying $133 a day to keep them there. And that money is going to people who are private enterprise. They're making money on these people who are being detained.
That's right. That's so, right. Hmm. In a nutshell. And in Louisiana, the cost of detention is less because, you know, a lot of things cost less in Louisiana. And our detention contracts may be more like $70 a day, still 10 times what it would cost to have someone supervised in the community. And yeah, and it's not only the companies that actually operate the prisons, but there are multitude of other companies that are benefiting, you know, the people that deal. The thing that drives me crazy is the phones. You can't call someone in immigration detention. They have to call you. They have to pay for the calls normally under normal circumstances. And it's very expensive just to put money on the accounts that they use. And that just, you know, if you think of the food service, if you think of the transportation, if you think everything that is the medical care, everything that's provided to prisoners, then those are mostly provided by private companies.
Now you say that there are women at the facility in Brazil. Are there also children there?
No. In Louisiana, we don't have any children in, well, we don't have any children that are supposed to be in detention. We've encountered people that are minors that are in detention, but it's supposed to be adults only.
It's supposed to be adults only. So we don't, I mean, we've heard a lot of ballyhoo about, you know, children in cages at the border, but we're not currently holding any of those in Louisiana. Is that correct?
That's right. Those folks are held mostly close to the border, is my understanding, though there have been family prisons in different parts of the country. They family detention centers in different parts of the country. But a lot of the children being caged or people being held supposedly short-term near the border, though those people have been held for much, much longer periods of time than they're legally allowed to be held. And those conditions are just absolutely deplorable.
You know, this raises a question of federal versus state responsibility. Now, ICE is a federal agency, right, or a federal part of the government. But it's housing people in state, often in state facilities or private facilities in a particular state. What does the state of Louisiana get out of this? Do they get anything from this operation?
I have to admit, I don't know exactly what the state's participation in this is. That's just something I'd need to research a little farther. There is a prison that I've visited, Wynn Correctional Center in Winfield, that I believe I visited when I was practicing disability rights law. I believe I visited that prison when it was a prison, when it was a state prison. And now it's just being used, it's just been repurposed. So I don't know exactly what the connection is with Wynn. And I know it's privately operated now, and it was privately operated then. As you said, there was a book that came out about someone who went undercover as a prison guard there when it was a prison, you know, that housed state inmates. Now, I do know that in several of these facilities, the county or the parish leases the facility, built the facility, and then the ICE pays them a daily rate. Hmm. And people, I know the sheriff in Allen Parish built a new facility to house ICE detainees. He used state bond funds for it. And then he gets, you know, the payments from ICE, and it was a very profitable thing. He did it. He was a economic development for his parish.
Yeah, he was an entrepreneur. Now, sometimes these ICE payments are actually pretty significant. I think there was one parish that I heard that was getting $750,000 or something like that a year. The Jackson Parish Correctional Center in Louisiana was giving
the
sheriff.
Mm-hmm. That's the figure that I heard. And that, of course, has Jackson Parish Correctional Center that holds a lot of people seeking asylum. I've visited that center, and it's very big, and everyone that I met there was seeking asylum, I think. Yes. Maybe one guy who had been picked up from Arkansas had been living there for a while, you know, living in the U.S. for a while.
But, you know, how does it all... How does all this detention square with that? Give us, you're tired, you're hungry, you're poor, you're downtrodden, and we will give them rest or something like that with the American ideals. What's going on? Have we demonized immigrants to the point where we are no longer able to think about them as humans and they're just sort of cattle that we're housing?
Well, I really fear that that's a lot of what's going on in the political arena. I mean, I think that, you know, immigrants are an easy target. I think immigrants benefit our country in general. I don't think we're at all threatened by folks that, by at least the folks that I've met and the vast majority of people in immigration detention just want to be part of the American dream. And that dream includes liberty and safety. And the people that contribute to our economy, if they're allowed to.
Now, you're one of the rare people who's actually met some of these detainees. These detainees are not really front page news. How can this be happening under our nose here in Louisiana at all these facilities? And why isn't this a front page news? Are people, I imagine most people are completely unaware, and we've got to move quickly because we have just a few seconds left.
Well, I do think that people are unaware, and there's a lot you can do to educate yourself about this issue. There are a lot of groups working on correcting this situation, and if you look under immigration and immigration detention on the internet, you're going to find a lot of information. And there are journalists doing great work in covering the subject. But, you know, people just don't care about, and they don't feel like this affects them directly. And I guess that's the problem.
Is there a website or a place where people could go to find out more information?
Yeah, we have a website. It's called Louisiana Advocates for Immigrants in Detention. We also have an email address. If people are interested and they would like to help, I'd really encourage people to email laadvocatesforimmigrants@gmail.com. So it's not Louisiana, it's laadvocatesforimmigrants@gmail.com. And mention that you listen to this program, and I'll be sure to get back to you and tell you how you can help. We have people locally that are doing a lot of work with this. We help transport people if and when they are released from detention and get them to where they're going. Almost none of them are going to someplace in Louisiana.
Right.
Most people were flown into here by ICE, and when they leave, they go to relatives or to sponsors in other states.
Well, this is an amazing issue, and it's one that we need to focus on and take care of. It's a blight on the American dream, in my opinion. We have been talking this morning with Ms. Nell Hahn, who is a lawyer who's been working with detainees, ICE detainees in Louisiana. Thanks so much for talking to us this morning.
Thanks, Pearson. Thanks for your interest in this.
Bayou to Beltway is copyrighted by KRVS for the private use of its audience. Any other use of any portion of this program without written consent of KRVS is prohibited. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and do not necessarily reflect the views of KRVS, its officers, or members. To listen to a podcast of the interview we just heard, go to krvs.org.
This program was made possible in part by contributions to KRVS Public Radio from listeners like you.
You are listening to KRVS 88.7 FM, Lafayette, Lake Charles.